Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists, programming executives, development executives, and A&R. Michelle Zeitlin is excited to share her tips and tools for success through her conversations mostly via Zoom during quarantine. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
A touchstone as to like what television shows they've been on, or I wasn't prejudiced by, were they a Disney kid or a Nickelodeon kid, or, you know, like none of that was in my head. My reference was 8 years of film and television out of Europe.
Matthew LaSalle gets quite impassioned when talking about his current position working for Game Changer Films as a casting director. He's worked with Evie Brown over the years and created and cast several projects with her, and he's very proud of his opportunity now to serve underrepresented populations both on camera and behind the camera. Game Changer is looking to do films with LGBTQ talent, older talent, people with disabilities, people of color. And Matthew LaSalle is quite excited and quite passionate about this opportunity, as you'll hear in this conversation. In addition, he shares his history and his own personal trajectory, working first as an actor, studying at Lambda in London, and then pivoting into casting, and why that has worked for him and why he enjoys that craft.
I was an actor. I went to Lambda in London, and I studied acting and after college, and I ended up living in London for 8 years. And then during that 8 year time, I'm going to do the short version of this for you. I was a casting assistant, and then was able to get my own work, and then at a very young age, actually, looking back on it. And then when I turned 30, I decided to move back to the States because my family lives in the States, and I ended up in LA. So, and then through Rocket Science on, I was casting independently. There was a time in that period where I worked at 20th Century Fox as a director of feature film casting. And there was a time where a couple of years ago where I worked at Paramount Television Studios I called it casting consultant because I was really brought in for pilot season. And basically I've always been an independent casting director. So mostly focusing on independent film, working with new filmmakers. The occasional studio film happens, but it's mostly in the independent film space, which is something that I'm super comfortable with. And I'm just trying to give you the... And then this opportunity with Game Changer happened in October, and I was made head of casting for Game Changer. I'm still able to cast independently, which is really nice as well, so I can do both jobs. So that's what it's been.
It was 2001, just after 9/11, and here Matthew LaSalle shares a little bit of his history.
You know, this is pre-internet almost. I mean, it was 2001, so it was post 9/11. Everybody was in a different state of mind. It was a very scary time, I remember, and people weren't on the internet in the same. There's no IMDb wasn't a thing. You know, it just like you had to know your stuff. You had big giant books of actors' photos, and like
they were black and white.
Yes, they were black and white, and you were going to movies, and you were going to film festivals, and you were going, you know, like that's how you up your knowledge, you know. So and you were meeting actors, you know, and you were auditioning actors, physically auditioning people, and it was a very lengthy, it could be a very lengthy process, especially in film television. It wasn't, you know, it was still fast somehow. I don't know. I mean, I did a pilot for John Wells after I did Mean Creek, and I I think I cried almost every night.
ER, that John Wells?
What? Yeah. 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 And I think the amount of work that I did on that show, it was almost traumatic. Like it was satisfying the studios and John's company, and there were a lot of chefs in the kitchen, and then there was thousands and thousands of actors to audition, and then the pressure of all the big name agencies wanting to have a client in the show, and then the show not getting picked up, and it taking 4 months to cast, you know, just this crazy process, and like buckets of photos coming into your office every day, and you know, just it was overwhelming, because that's not how I like to cast. It's just not how I do it. So, you know, having your own style means that, you know, eventually people will like your style, but it's not conducive to certain ways that other organizations work, you know what I mean? So I didn't feel that having to go through thousands and thousands of submissions was conducive to finding the right actor for a role. You should know, you should have in your head and be able to list in your head who's right for a role, or else don't be a casting director. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that was like, there's a creativity, like the things that you're thinking about how you think of actors are the colors of, and that's, you know, those are the colors that you're choosing. Those are the tool that knowledge is your toolbox. And it's always great to educate yourself, but if you're in a very condensed, fast paced environment, you need to know your stuff. I do feel like there's something about casting in London where there's like just a lot more respect for the profession of casting a little bit than it is than here sometimes, because not that my filmmakers here don't rely on me, I think they do, but I feel like there's a very big responsibility. You know, there is a very big responsibility put on the casting director to know a lot about actors and a lot about just the business, and to be able to dig really deep to find someone who's right for the role. Whereas when I came to the States, it was always about, well, what name can we put into something in order for something to go, you know? And I was never into that, and which is why Mean Creek was probably the perfect jumping point for my career. It may have been some sort of arrogance on my part, or perceived arrogance, but I didn't really have any other choice, because I actually had to make money. So my motivation was, you know, getting money in, but also wanting to find people who wanted someone like me to cast their material, you know. And I always thought I was a very easygoing, you know, fun person. So I just felt like, who had a skill, who had experience with working with wonderful actors, whether it was from training at a Lambda, or training at a National Theater Institute, or training from college, or training after I went to as an actor, or all the experiences I had as an actor in general. I felt like I had a good body of knowledge to at least be working for someone for them to successfully cast their film. It's, looking back on it, it is a very big leap. You know, it is a very big what is it? It's a very it was very ballsy of me to do it, you know, just to think that I could, when knowing now how many wonderful casting directors there were at the time. You know, why would anybody want to choose me to work on something? But, you know, to be fair, I worked on low budget material and newer people usually working on their first or second projects. But those people have done really well. And, you know, 20 years later, some of them are making giant movies right now, you know, so it's just how I started. You know, it wasn't
on the ground floor, people with tremendous passion.
Yeah, I mean, I was really into it. I really liked the job, and I loved the the figuring out of who's right for a role and having an opinion about it and working with people who liked your opinion or sometimes don't like your opinion, but you like there was always a respect there to figure out what's right for the part, you know?
I want to go back to UK.
Okay.
That's pretty exciting. I have my own kind of back and forth with UK, UK to LA. I'm very actively involved with a lot of development in London right now and also in Bristol and UC Weston. Tell me about Lambda and why you didn't shift more into acting and how you veered into casting.
I did my undergraduate work. I got my bachelor's at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. And while I was there, I went to the National Theater Institute, which a lot of very, very successful actors and artists and directors in their college years go to. It was a program specifically for liberal arts students who weren't at a conservatory. And at the time it was run by a very well-known theater director, Richard Digby Day, who ended up running a lot of programs around the world. And at the time he was running the National Theater Institute, and he was basically the catalyst for me to go audition for the one-year classical training program at Lambda. I actually had a British passport. I have a British passport because I was born in London. So it all kind of happened organically. And at the time I was really into acting. I thought that's what I was going to do and that's who I was gonna be. But once I got to drama school, I realized once I got to school, and even in that 1 year program, we had such wonderful actors who are still acting today. And I met, you meet wonderful actors just through the school and through the other programs that are at the school. You start to realize that there was always a little seed in my head, like maybe this wasn't for me, but I was still passionate about it at the time. I was in my early 20s, and really when I decided to just stay in London, it really wasn't about acting. It was more a personal choice to stay there and sort of figure out who I was as a person. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And some years are great years and some years are not great years. And some days I wish I worked for somebody for several years before becoming a casting director. Sometimes I wish that, and sometimes I think, it's all good. You are where you are, and you can't, it's the same thing I tell actors, like you can never compare yourself to somebody else, because it will just go down a very bad path, and you just have to be confident in where you are and know that where you are is you're there for a reason, And don't worry about what other people think, because it doesn't matter. They're not living your life. So these are that's sort of how my philosophy, I guess, on where I am.
It's not just career philosophy, it's life philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think casting directors have a lot of, I hear a lot of casting directors speak. I've spoken to a lot of casting directors, having been president of the Casting Society of America. I've spoken to 800 of them at a time. I know that we are very, in general, casting directors are very philosophical, and they're very, they act as psychologists a lot of the time, because you are dealing with people daily, and people's daily struggles, and you're, in order to get a project made, you are dealing with the psychology of where other people are, where the agents that you're speaking to, what their mindset is, what the manager's mindset, what the artist's mindsets are, what your producers and directors' mindset, like you're just constantly like in this, like storm in a teacup situation, where you're trying to manage everybody's stuff and still get a product out at the end that you can be proud of when you watch it on screen. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's more than just having the idea for the actor, and it's more than it's so many different things, and it's every project, and the beauty of it is every project is different. Okay, so for Game Changer, I'm the head of casting. It's a company that's focused on putting material out that, putting projects out that are female-driven, opportunity, you know, especially in this within the scripts that the roles are written for people of a certain age, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color, people with disabilities. It's focusing our energies on those categories so that giving opportunities to where people normally weren't getting opportunities. And which for me is the best because a film I'm working on right now called Pale Horse, the lead as written is a Black woman in her 40s. She's a little overweight. She has MS and she's in a wheelchair. And you can't just, you know, say, can we just hire Viola Davis and put her in a wheelchair?
I was just gonna say, so did you make it off to Viola Davis?
And so it's been a journey because it's not easy to find. Why would it be easy to find? Because people, you know, it's already hard enough to become an actor. You know, to decide to become an actor when you've had when you're born with a limited ability that, you know, your parents are, you know, may put you in acting class to give you as a kid, but they want you to grow up to be an attorney or something to, you know, to be able to support yourself, you know, because of your condition or whatever it is, you know, it becomes, it's not the place that people normally go to. So I've also reached out to public speakers and inspirational speakers and people who are like acting adjacent, you know, and it's still a difficult task because sometimes there's a woman that I'm reached out to who's a nurse who won an award and she's been in a couple of commercials and she's in a chair and I haven't even heard back from her, you know? And so, because not everybody wants to be the lead in the movie. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's not everybody's thing. You know, from the simple moment where she said to Matt Damon on Project Greenlight, you know, like it's important. What's happening behind the screen is just as important as what's happening in front of the screen, and for that to be such a to be such a point of like a what is it like
contention?
Well, contention, but also like to spark such an issue, right. Where she was just saying what she thought, and the people in the room, the white straight people in the room, were like, "What do you mean? I don't understand." That really was the start of people seeing, oh, I think we have a problem here. You know, like you guys don't even, we see the inequity. You're not seeing the inequity. It doesn't make you a bad person, but it's really clear what's happening. You know, and so I think just from that moment on Project Greenlight and watching it, people were shocked because the people in marginalized communities see it all the time, you know? And to really hear that the message hasn't gotten through was a tipping point. And so I think it was a natural progression for her to eventually get to Game Changer. And my work with her over several films has, and that trust that we have with each other is a really good play. It's a really good fit.
And I'm just guessing here, I'm spitballing, but my guess is Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, those guys, they probably think they've had their own sort of world of, you know, being
their journey.
Southie guys from Boston, you know, I mean, there's some class struggle there all on its own, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
people have their own viewpoint of what it is to struggle. What we're up against.
And no one's negating their struggle or what they were up against or how they, but when you put it in the context of marginalized groups not being able to even be on the same playing field, not have the same opportunities to education, not having this, just by looking at somebody, people assume of you, whether you're an out gay man or a person of color, or, you know, like certain assumptions are made which make you automatically not be on the same playing field. And so that's what we're talking, that's where this sort of the genesis of all this is. It's like, yes, your struggle was real, we get that, but we don't even get the same tools to have the chances that you may have had. You know, just like, there are just as many brilliant writers who, you know, at the time who were BIPOC individuals, you know, who didn't have the chances that Matt Damon had as a writer, you know, who couldn't just walk into an agency. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't representation at the agencies. You know, there wasn't representation in
there
the now. There is now, but it's like, but it wasn't then. You have to remember it. What it wasn't. You know, I remember being on a call after having an interview for a job, and then I got butt dialed, and the producers were making fun of me on the call, like on the butt dial, like so I could hear what was happening, and they were, it was really disparaging, and I felt really bad. I was like, did I do that in the meeting? Was I that person that they're reflecting back on the conversation that we had? Like, it causes you to spiral out. You know what I mean? Like, because if someone's calling you a fag, or someone's calling you, God, he's so gay, or some, you know, like, or, you know, it's hurtful. I'm such a, you know, it's just like, it's like, wow, you know, I was just being myself, you know, maybe I, you know, and so being myself was not good enough. So, you know, and when you have to unpack that, you have to recover from that. And it's very hard to recover from that in a positive way. It can take a couple of months or years, like just having that in your, it still affects me, just that one call. Like, I'll never forget it, because I thought I gave a great interview. I mean, I thought I gave a great presentation and like should have gotten the film, you know? So, you know, it was shocking to me, but but at the end of the day, like it was a good lesson, because it was the lesson of, you're not always going to make everybody think that you're such a fabulous person. It's just not going to happen, and that's okay. But when it feels like kind of like hate speech amongst bros, you think, well, I have to deal with a lot of people who are like them. You know, am I never going to be able to cross over because how I present myself is such a threat to them. You know what I mean? Like, and so I'm never going to get to do that work but then again, maybe I don't want to do that work. Maybe I don't want to be that person. Maybe I don't want to work with those people, you know? So again, like, you know, and I feel like a lot of what happens still to this day, even though the studios are diversified and there's diversity, blah, blah, blah happening, there's also a lot of it not happening. And so you go to these meetings and you have to look at who's at the top of the chain, who's making the decisions. And it's not a lot of, there isn't at that very top stratosphere, it's not who's signing off on things. It's not always what, it's not where it should be, honestly.
Yeah, and Hollywood doesn't get it in small increments. They always go all the way one way or the other. I mean, this whole Me Too movement had so much backlash against decent people too. Right. And now there's like kind of an overreaching to make sure your entire group of staffers is somebody of color, LGBTQ. I mean, we just never get it right. There's never a real balance in my
opinion. I don't think, because you know, it has to start somewhere. So I'm glad it's happening. You know, but, and so the people who are placed in those positions have a huge responsibility on their hands, you know, and it's also unfair to them because they have a huge responsibility on their hands. You know, it's like, it's this double-edged sword. Like, you have to be the person who sets an example, but it's like, it also in a way strips away your humanity as a person. like, because then you're having to conform in some way to make somebody else feel better about themselves instead of being yourself.
Since recording this podcast, I was invited to be a panelist on a symposium across the pond, UK to LA, that's United Kingdom to Los Angeles, by Sylvia Lane at UC Weston, where I have been a guest teacher, instructor, judge, choreographer, director for my Passion to Power workshops. And Sylvia asked if there was anyone I'd like to recommend for this symposium who could speak about creating opportunity out of a crisis in the entertainment industry. And I thought of Matthew LaSalle because we had just recorded this podcast. So I'm very excited. I'll be sharing that floor in cyberspace on Zoom. I think we'll have about 100 people listening in. And if you'd like more information to participate in this symposium, you can send an email to info@morezap.com. That's info@morezap.com, and we'll make sure to route the Zoom information to you so you can participate. Now, more of the interview with Matthew LaSalle. Enjoy. All right, so as we wrap up, Matthew, I would love you to speak to those two pods, the 18 to 24-year-old aspirational people are trying to figure it out where they're going, maybe after college or even if they're going to skip college. And then those people in that 40 to 60 pod who have probably been entrepreneurs or they've been at a major company and they're figuring it out during a shutdown of so much industry work. What would you like to say to everybody?
Well, the good news is I think within the next 6 months, it will start to all come work. Work is coming back, certainly in the world of television. Things are casting, you know, my friends who are actors are all auditioning. So I see what's my friends who are casting directors seem to be working more and more. So I'm working more and more. So I feel like, you know, despite where we may be with the pandemic, I'm hopeful that in the next 6 to 9 months with vaccines coming out and all that kind of stuff, that things will start to open up as far as work opportunities. In the 18 to 24, 25 demographic, you just have to follow your passion. This has to be something that you really want to do, you know, and that may be where you are right now. And if it changes, that's okay. You know, if something, but you have to give it time. You can't expect everybody to think you're the most amazing actor in the world and see that. You have to have patience. You have to put in the work, and you have to just give yourself the opportunity to meet as many people as you can, audition as much as you can, really have a good work ethic. You know, take it seriously, stay in classes, work on your technique, you know, create material for yourself. If you can't do that, work with people who create material for themselves. It's the same thing as casting directors have been saying over and over and over again for years. It's like, you just have to believe in yourself, you know? And like I said, you know, even for me, when I was acting, there was a point where I was like, it wasn't about not believing in yourself. It was sort of recognizing that there was another space for me to still be in the industry, but to be in it in a different way. And that's okay too, you know? So if your thing right now is you want to be an actor, it is one of the hardest jobs in the world to have. And you can get that amazing moment where you have the job, your dream job, and then 6 months later, that dream job is over and you're back to square one. And it happens to every actor. So you have to be okay with that journey. You know, it's going to be a hard journey. Do not compare yourself to anybody else. Don't make assumptions about how someone else's life is and have that affect who you are, because it will take you down a very bad path, you know? So just try to remain as hopeful and positive as possible, and trust in the fact that you are, if you think you're good at this and have something to say and and have something to give to this industry, then do it until you can't do it anymore. And then to the 40 and 60 year olds, it's like, you're competing with people who've been doing it since they were 18 to 25 year olds. And that's always the challenge. There's always going to be 100 people ahead of you in, but again, it's kind of the same thing. If you think, and I know many actors who started very late in life, you know, and I know people who've started late in life and switched careers and have been successful. And I think those people have also not been successful. Like, you have to be okay with the failure and okay with the rejection and just keep on going. Because eventually, again, if you're really good at this, all we want as casting directors is to know who the good actors are. So it may seem like a very generalized statement that I'm about to make, but we see you. Eventually someone sees you, you know, eventually that will happen. You just have to trust that that's going to happen.
That's a great wrap up. And I have one extra question. Are you on social media, and do you actually follow social media to find people?
I do. Well, Instagram for sure has been, you know, a very good resource for me. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook. So it's at LaSalle Casting for Instagram, and it's at LaSalle Casting for Twitter. And then my Facebook page is just my name, but I have when I post things there, if it's for the public, I'll make it a public post, and then I just keep things private, you know, for stuff. And then YouTube, I'm like, you know, I used to watch a lot of like web series on YouTube. That's, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago when I was kind of doing, I don't do that as much anymore, but I definitely, you know, try and keep up with like who the influencers are. But in my core as a casting director, it really hurts my soul.
I understand that.
So, but that doesn't mean that an influencer can't be a good actor. You know, it's just not where I traditionally looked for actors. And so maybe I just have to open up my mind a little bit and just be like, okay, just because they're big in a beauty blog doesn't mean that they can't be an actor, you know? Because honestly, it's the same thing, like as me looking for this character in Pale Horse, like I've had to expand my thought process on it because somebody who may be a beauty blogger who's a person with a disability or inspirational speaker, they're actor adjacent, you know? So if they have camera, if they're on camera and they have a personality on camera, there's a good chance that they can maybe turn it into something else. And obviously that's happened multiple times. So, you know, I don't, and I also look at musicians as well on YouTube because, I find that musicians often are also in the acting world, especially young, you know, budding musicians, you know. And then I have a very good friend who's in the skate and surf world, and there's also a lot of, you know, people in that world who are very outgoing and have, you know, are always filming themselves and have their own channels and, you know, are interesting faces and, you know, yes, in my soul, I'm a traditional casting director, but like you have to be open to new pathways of finding people.